This week's episode is sponsored by Spaces. Spaces is a new platform backed by 15 plus years of educator feedback designed to document the process and progress behind student learning in your classroom. Join the Spaces community to connect with educators across North America and gain access to free teacher-created resources, help educators who are just starting out on their journey, and learn new things from teachers who have been there before. So visit community.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ronald Hay, and welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Hotline, where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, we have Katie from the Toronto District School Board. Katie, what can we do for you today?
Hey, Ron. As we are about to enter a new school year, I have plenty of optimism. I think this will be our first normal school year in over 2 years, but the pandemic has truly altered how education is delivered. I actually have a few big picture questions. Number one, I'm wondering if you think hybrid learning will still be around in the future. Number two, how will technology change education and how it's delivered? Number three, what does the future of education look like in 10 to 20 years? Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Katie, for calling in. Wow, those are some pretty big questions, and I don't think I am the guy to answer those, but I think I found a person who can. Today, I bring in Steve Brown, the CEO of Nelson Publishing, Canada's largest education publisher. Steve has been in the role for almost 6 years now, and his career spans a diverse mix of industry and technology experiences from multimedia entertainment, logistics services, automotive, and now learning solutions. Since joining Nelson in September of 2016, Steve has transformed the vision of a 104-year-old company. He has reframed the organization's digital competency by instituting a technology department comprised of some of the world's best and brightest talent based in Silicon Beach, California. Additionally, over the past 12 months, the company has engaged in various M&A activities, including the acquisition of one of its largest competitors, as well as signing numerous agency and partnership deals to ensure Nelson offers a world-class portfolio of learning solution and for all its markets. Steve, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Ronald. Good morning to you.
Before we even jump into some of the bigger questions that our caller called in with today, I usually like to give the audience a little bit more context to who you are, where you're from, and what you do. So I would say most teachers are probably familiar with Nelson, right? We see it on a lot of our textbooks. We see it in our classroom, kind of in our periphery vision. But can you provide a little bit more context to what your business does? And what are some other things that Nelson does perhaps teachers might not know about?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, Nelson's such an interesting company. I had a dinner one time about 3 or 4 years ago with the provost of one of the premier universities in Canada. And over dinner, he gave me a tagline, which I've recycled and used many times. And that's that Nelson is the company that educated the educators. Because even if you go back, we're now, you mentioned in the opening, 104 years, we're now 107 years old, we'll be 108 years old in September. And if you're in education and you were educated in Canada, you were educated on Nelson materials. So it's so strange. I just came back from New Orleans for an EdTech conference. And actually at the booth, coming back into Canada, I gave my passport and the immigration officer said, "Who do you work for?" And I told him, and he said, "Oh, Nelson, the textbook company." And I've had that response from Uber drivers. I've had it from immigration people. You know, literally wherever I go, everybody knows Nelson. And in any other aspect, any other walk or industry, people put value to their brand. In education, we don't do that, but it's something I'm really proud of, our brand. So we have really changed from being that historical provider of educational materials, textbooks, and now we are a solutions provider to education. And predominantly that's now with technology, but we also do a great amount of work with professional learning and professional development. We just did a series of webinars called See Us Learners about the future, the history of Black Canadians and Black Canadian history. And we had literally over 28,000 educators across the country. So we do a lot of various things, including those webinars, PLPD sessions, and of course our Edwin platform, which is now our premier delivery mechanism for all disciplines across the country.
Yeah, you know what? Let's jump into that right now then, because I originally was going to plan on asking a little bit about Edwin later on. I don't know too much about it, but since you bring it up, let's talk about it. From what I've been reading online, this is probably one of your biggest accomplishments, is launching a platform called Edwin, and I believe it looks like in 2018. So what exactly is Edwin? What do teachers need to know about this platform that you've launched?
Oh, where to begin?
Should we add an extra 30 minutes to the show, or?
Well, I'll try and be as succinct as possible. Let me go back, if I may, to when I joined, which was September 2016. I accepted the position to join as CEO in April, but I was finishing off my prior professional commitment that I had. But during that 4 or 5 month period, I asked my new team to do as much research for me as possible on various different questions, because it really struck me. I had two high school kids at that time. And it struck me that their experience was not a lot different than my experience some 40 years earlier. And I thought, how can any consumerist-based material, product, service not really change in 40 years and still remain relevant? Because in every other aspect of a student's life, they're in a digital environment. Whether it's nonverbal communication, social media, ordering transportation, food, interacting with content, whether that be movies, music, games, whatever it may be, every other aspect of the life involves search and discovery. But yet in education, we were still based around those Socratic methodologies that had been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And I was concerned taking over a company that had been around then 100 years, because a lot of people die at 100.
Yeah.
And it's the next 100 years that I was tasked with, not the last 100 years. Mm. So I gathered a lot of market intelligence, a lot of knowledge, a lot of history, because we literally touch every single one of 5.1 million students in Canada every year and have done for decades. So we've got data which had never really been analyzed in great detail until I came in. So I wanted to deliver a methodology of learning which was cross-disciplinary, because when I studied the leading educational nations in the world, Finland was always the one that everyone talked about.
Yep.
And it's cross-disciplinary, and you know, they don't learn social sciences and math and geography and history. You know, they learn about everything. And as a speech I gave recently, I talked about, just because something isn't literacy, it doesn't mean it's not literate. Mm. Because if you can be reading about geography or history, you're still in a literacy environment. Mm. So I wanted to create a methodology which people who wanted to teach in the old methodologies of up the vertical of a discipline, or in a multidisciplinary method, you had a choice. You could meet every teacher, every educator, and every student with where they're comfortable with and where they're at in their learning journey. Yeah. So the next thing I looked at was something that became very prevalent during the pandemic, which was the amount of digital resources, apps, and so forth that a teacher had to try and navigate. Mm. And when I read about teachers in the pandemic using 30, 40, up to 70 different apps in a week, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, teachers are at the center of all learning, and I wanted to give teachers back the one attribute which every teacher I ever meet, and I have the pleasure of meeting thousands over a year, and that's they're all short of time.
Yeah.
Well, when you need 70 logins, 70 UI UXs, 70 different operating systems, you're going to soak up a lot of time. So I tasked our team and said, I want you to be able to, no matter what the problem is, no matter what the search is, no matter what the discipline is, it's got to be the same UI UX, a single sign on, all subjects in all areas. And the other thing that coming from a, you know, prior industries that had gone through disruption, I thought, what better position for me to take over as the CEO, as the world's largest and Canada's absolute largest number one market share in learning, than to self-disrupt? Because most disruption comes from outside a market sector or industry. But if we could self-disrupt ourselves and go from that 100-year history of textbooks into a new habitual learning methodology with one objective, students should love it, teachers should want to use it, and learning outcomes should increase. So Edwin is a learning ecosystem with all tools, all disciplines, interactives, manipulatives, voice to text, text to voice, video, everything in one place. And the thing that I'm most delighted about is that learning outcomes are going up with hundreds of thousands of kids across the country, because we are looking at them as consumers of knowledge and of learning, rather than telling them how they should learn. And in any other aspect of the world, the consumer voice counts. If you have a great product, service, software, you're successful. If it's less than optimal and somebody else has got a better one, then you fail and you die. And I think that's quite appropriate. So that's a brief overview of Edwin. I could go on a long time.
I want to say, you said a couple of things that really kind of gave me some goosebumps there. You know, I find, number one, I find that when people aren't teachers, I find that it's sometimes hard to relate or have the other person relate to what teachers do in the classroom, because they've just never done it before. But when you were talking that for those 2 minutes there and telling me about Edwin and your research and what you've discovered, I was like, wow, like, you really get it. You said a couple of things in terms of time and the login. Teachers don't want to do this. And, you know, you got 70 different apps and 70 different logins. I'm like, that's actually happening at my school right now, to be honest with you. We got Zoom, we got Teams, we got Canvas, we got BBK12. We have all this tech, and our school is a very prides itself on how forward thinking we are. But one of the complaints that teachers have from the ground level is there's too much stuff going on. And we need a platform where we can kind of do all these things at once. And the kids are actually confused as well. They'll come up to me and say, Mr. Hey, so where do we get this from? Do we get this from BBK or should we get this from email? I'm like, I don't know. I'll send it to you somewhere. And it becomes very, very confusing. So I thought you nailed it right on the money there when you kind of made that comment there. So,
you know, it's so true. You know, we're in major, major school boards across the country, and a lot of the independent schools as well, most of the independent schools in the GTA. But then from, you know, Toronto District School Board, Dufferin Peel, massive school boards with tens of thousands of kids using Edwin every day. And we iterate. We see what's working and what's not working. Obviously, there's the restrictions on privacy. We don't know who the student is, but we can see what they're learning, how they're understanding it, the metacognitive feedback. So we get this feedback. So someone said to me recently, when will Edwin be finished? And I said, if you can imagine Edwin finished, you have no imagination at all, because it will never be finished. It will always iterate. And I knew when I came in, after spending 9 years running one of the world's largest media companies, that we had to make this journey into digitization to be able to keep students engaged. I knew I would fix, not that the company was broken, but I knew I would take the company on a journey of improvement. But what I didn't know is that I'd fall in love with education, and that's happened on the journey. So I appreciate your words as an educator, but it's a passion that will be with me for the rest of my life, certainly. And when I look back on how effective Edwin has been, it's now used in 9 other countries around the world as well. I was recently in Finland, talking to Finland, and Finland, that beacon of, you know, the new bastion of education, they are so impressed with Edwin, because they said, quote, the Ministry of Education, we don't have anything like this. Wow. we created what we believe to be the future, but we don't have a tool that meets us to where we want to get to. So I'm really pleased with where we're at. And I just hope that all of the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of teachers across this country and around the world are really enjoying what we set out to do, which was to give them time and engage students.
Wow. You said something about a moment ago too, about just having vision and creativity and this iterative process of just changing what Edwin looks like moving forward. So I kind of want to transition into what the caller was asking about, you know, what does the future of education look like? And I'm sure you probably have your own vision of what education and what learning looks like 10, 20 years down the road. You must, in order to build something like this. So for you, if you're to kind of pick out a couple of bullet points here, I got a couple of my own bullet points. What do you think, generally speaking, education looks like or hope to look like 10, 20 years down the road?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. Your caller was Katie, I think.
Yes, that's right.
You know, Katie, I think that the future of education is one of real vision and hope. But I think we have to listen to students. We have to listen to the way they engage. We have to see how their educational journey maps to outcome. The only measure of education is student outcome. If the outcomes aren't going up, it's because we, in the fabric of education, aren't delivering a methodology that they can relate to. So when we see things that are working, let's double down and go with that. And that's what Edwin's all about. And what I see is, I believe that if we try and pigeonhole students, then we are potentially losing the great leader of the free world of the future. If we look at socioeconomics, or we look at race, or we look at religions, we've got to break down barriers because, let's face it, if we can't create equity in the classroom, what chance do we have in society? So even though it may be a subconscious bias, there are still biases, I believe, in a classroom. So we've got to make education a place of problem solving, of intercommunication, of, you know, real 21st century skills, and not try and teach them about something in certain disciplines, particularly to give them an opportunity to get employment in a job sector which won't be there when they finish the school education and post-secondary education. So we need to teach them how to be able to cooperate, to be able to work together, to be able to study, history, to learn it because it's interesting, but also things that don't work. And I always say to people, there is no right and wrong. There's only right and learning. So let's create an experience for kids to want to learn, to be able to learn in their methodology, and not believe that, you know, reading so many hours a week is going to get you as literate as the next kid, because it may be that listening to text rather than reading text. And to me, that's still learning, right? And it's still reading. And we have to be flexible in our methodologies. I think that, you know, education will change, particularly in post-secondary. I think post-secondary is going to go through a massive change. And the thing that I love about K-12 education is it never goes away. I don't care what happens in the world. K-12 doesn't go away because it's societal.
Yeah.
It's not just about education. It's about parents getting back to work. It's about kids learning to play and cooperate. It's about learning to be a human being. It's not just about education. And if we can get those multimodal, multifaceted educational journeys as we move into the future, classrooms will change. And I think that schools are going to change, but will still be that fabric of society. So I think it's a journey of change founded in something that inherently will never change, which is that you go to school at a very early age until you're 16, 17, 18 years of age.
I agree there. Let's talk about some of the more nitpicky things in the classroom, or what your thoughts are. Starting off with textbooks, right? You guys publish textbooks. What are your thoughts about everything being digital moving forward? You know, whether textbooks being tablets or on laptops. Do you think print will be obsolete in the future at some point?
You know, it's a great question. I worked in three industries in media, which were movies, music, and games. And very early on in my career, I got the opportunity to buy the world's largest vinyl pressing company. And at the time, I thought we should buy it, but I'd only been in the position for a few months. And all of my colleagues who'd been around the music industry for years and years and years told me I would be wasting money. That asset went up 600 times in value because people like physical. They like to collect it. And I think that, you know, to me, it doesn't matter. I'm agnostic to the delivery method. Nelson never owned a paper mill. So we just changed our delivery mechanism from physical to digital. So I don't think it goes away in totality, but I think it will go away in classrooms by the vast majority. Some kids in some subjects need some tactility and some paper at various points of the learning career. However, I think that the vast majority of learning will be done in a digital format. And I'll give you some background to why it's better, in my opinion. We used to write a textbook, work with subject matter experts and authors, and then we'd go through the approval list with the ministries around the country, and then we'd produce a textbook and we'd deliver it to the classroom, and then all of the schools across the province would end up buying that classroom because it was tied to the new curriculum. And that might take 2 to 3 years from starting writing it to getting it in classrooms. If you think about nomenclature, descriptors, business, economics, by the time that textbook reaches its journey, it's already obsolete. So things that were a correct descriptor, let's take Truth and Reconciliation, our description of First Nations has changed during my period in education 6 years, three times, on what was acceptable and now is not acceptable. And you look at economics. We could have written an economics book about cryptocurrencies and what was going to happen, and then the rise and then the failure. No matter what, where you are on that learning spectrum, we were wrong by the time that textbook got to the classroom. Anybody who talked about the future of transportation and combustion engines and so forth wrote books and talked about it on a continuum, and then Uber came along and disrupted the whole thing. So what we can do now with Edwin is we can deliver real time. We can change nomenclature. We can put current learnings, findings, and understandings tomorrow morning. And the other thing is we used to deliver the textbook and it had a table of contents in the front. Once we delivered that textbook to the classroom, we never knew teaching practice or student engagement. We delivered the textbook, 25 chapters, 20 chapters, whatever it may be. We wouldn't know that you as an educator, Ronald, only used chapters 1, 5, and 7, never even looked at the others. We'd have no feedback to how students liked that content because it was an inanimate object sitting in a classroom across the country and around the world. But with Edwin, we get to see how teachers are using it, in what order they're using it, and more importantly, what they're not using. So when we start on our next content journey, we put content in front of you the way you, Ronald, as an educator, or Katie, loves to learn. So we're more relevant. And if you're relevant, student engagement is more engaged and learning outcomes rise. So that's why I think technology is going to be the successor in the classroom.
Yeah, you. I don't think I even told you offline. I teach a high school grade 11, 12 accounting and other business courses as well. So I work with a team of other business teachers. It's funny that you mentioned that comment about how, you know, let's say you're talking about economics. By the time you print that textbook, you know, so much would have changed in the 2-3 years. And as a result of that, we teachers, I think we've realized that as well. At our school, we don't even really use business textbooks for that same reason. Right. I have this one teacher who's been around for 5 years now. He's like, no, I'm not using any textbooks. Like I'm just taking stuff out of the news because that's where things are real and happening. I think I'm the only teacher because I teach accounting where things are very more static. But other teachers, there's no textbooks in our classrooms for that same reason.
You know, it's an interesting point. I've just been asked to go to one of the very large school boards in Ontario, actually in Ottawa, to make a speech to their grade 11 and 12 business class. And I did it actually at Durham District a few years ago. And I want you to think about something as an economics and as a business teacher and as an accounting teacher. We have got 20 years, a full generation of people, both in secondary education, in the workforce, and now at high school. And normally those kids' parents at high school who've never lived through a recession, who won't know what to do. And this is this year and the next 4 or 5 years are not going to be the age of the P&L, but the age of the balance sheet. Companies will die because interest rates went up and they can't cover debt service costs. Mm-hmm. That's never been taught in classrooms because cost of funds was 1-2%. Yeah. This was basically free.
Yeah.
So kids don't know how to budget themselves, and teachers don't know how to teach because they probably have never lived through a recession and hyperinflation. So I've been asked to go and make this speech about that because, unfortunately, I'm an old guy and I have lived through one. But think about that. You're not armed. You're not taught of how to pivot and handle your business, your personal budget, your household budget through a recession when a mortgage rate goes from 2% to, God forbid, 15%.
I'm learning that right now. My mortgage is coming up for renewal soon, so I'm learning on the fly.
It's very interesting.
I want to move on to the next point. What are your thoughts about hybrid learning? I know many businesses, and I'm curious to learn about yours, many businesses are still kind of in this hybrid model. Do you think that, or can you envision schools embracing this hybrid model moving forward as well? Maybe 2 days in class, 3 days online. What do you think? Is hybrid model to stay, or do you think that was more of a COVID band-aid solution to the last 2 years?
I think COVID gave us learning. And I think that, and I'll tell you about what we're doing in a moment. It's somewhat unique, I think. But when I look at classrooms, and I think hybrid will stay. I think there are some kids who loved learning at home. Maybe they were socially stretched in the school. Maybe mental health issues. Maybe the fact that they weren't comfortable with the peers, that they didn't like to be seen as the kid with their head always in learning. So maybe for some of those kids, and we have to acknowledge that it's better for some students. So I think there'll always be some degree of it. I'm actually a huge believer in community. And I think there's a lot of learning and a lot of sparks of ideas, and, you know, brilliance comes out of a group of people together. So I actually think part of, you know, the educational journey is community, is your friends and your learnings and, you know, problem resolutions. So I think I think to some degree it will always remain. I don't think it's going to be anything like as prevalent. I went to schools when people were going back to school, when it was safe to do so, and the individual schools or districts said it was safe for us to go in. But what I saw was glee. What I saw was happiness. What I saw was joy about being back in the school. You know, when you know you're a teacher, you must have had kids come into your school and your classroom who were genuinely pleased to see you again.
Yeah, I was surprised.
And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. But I think you also have to acknowledge that isn't for everybody. And to some kids who were more comfortable learning at home and who did soar, frankly, then we have to give them kudos to them, and we have to pay them the equal respect as we do the kids who want to go back. But I think that it won't go away in total, hybrid. But I'm a believer, personally, that kids should be in community and should be together and should be learning in any different way.
What about you guys? Nelson, are you guys still in the hybrid model? Are you guys fully back in the office?
No, we're not fully back in the office. And there were parts of our business that worked right through the pandemic. We had to institute tremendous safety protocols. And up until very recently, by the way, the people who were in our distribution centers and customer service and so forth, who worked right through, we had no instances of COVID whatsoever. We've had a couple recently, but I think that's as people are sort of opening their chest and letting the shoulders down a bit more. Thankfully, everybody's, you know, fine and survived well. We used to have approximately 500 people in our headquarters in Toronto. And we've decided we're going to move. And a lot of that is because we are going to create collaborative spaces. Before, we had cubicles and offices. and everybody worked along. We had lots of meeting rooms, lots of big meetings. You can imagine the amount of collaboration that goes on in a technology company and a content company turning out materials. You know, it takes a village. But now a lot of them, we've over the last 2 years, we have done every 6 months surveys and said, you want to come back? At the beginning, everybody just wanted to get back to the office. Mm-hmm. Hated being at home. Was stressful. They didn't have the setup at home, a desk, the right chair, the right IT structure, the whatever it may be. And then 6 months in, they're like, yeah, you know, this is not, I mean, we're getting used to it. 12 months in, they're like, yeah, I wouldn't mind working from home, you know, 1 day a week, 2 days a week. We just finished our most recent survey to get our new office layout designed. And they're like, yeah, I could see myself coming in 1 day a week, maybe 2 days a week. We're happy to work at home now. We don't have to commute. We don't have to do this and that. But I'm concerned that we'll lose our spark, our imagination, our imagineering ability by bouncing off each other. So I'm not going to mandate everybody back to the office. It will always be hybrid. But I want to make the office so much more desirable.
Right.
So it's going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to be, there'll only be a few offices. Then there'll be hoteling desks, collaboration spaces. We're doing small pods for two or three people to meet. We're doing medium size. Then we're doing large boardrooms. So my intent is to make it such a desirable place to be that people want to come back.
All right.
And if they don't, I'll respect their wishes and they can work from home most of the time and we'll see. But again, it's about community and it's about that spark of magic that takes place. The greatest thing to me as a CEO is I love to see people wanting to add to their to-do lists.
Right.
Not take things away from it, because then you know they're really enjoying what they're doing and doing the best work. And the other thing is, my barometer is seeing people laughing around the coffee pot or the water fountain. That I feel great when I see that. And you can't do that when everybody's remote.
No, that's hard. There's certain things that you just can't replicate online. And I think community is one of those things. I think you just have to be in the workplace or in the school. And I agree with that. Moving forward a little bit, I don't know how much you know about this, but I'm just curious to throw it out there. The metaverse. I was also at the New Orleans ISTE conference as well. We didn't get a chance to bump into each other, but I went to a couple of booths and just really fascinated by what the vision looks like of what education could look like in the future. And I tried on some of the headsets and got a couple of sales pitches from people. Well, maybe let's just start off. Like, how much do you know about this? Is this something that Nelson perhaps is dabbling into, looking into, that you perhaps just did a couple of readings on? What are your thoughts? Is this something that could be part of the future? Or is this a novelty item, you think?
You know, I have the pleasure in working with some really, really smart people when it comes to technologies. I mean, our technology team, some of the things that you interact with every day and your students and your listeners, you know, the recommendation engine that was created by Amazon was written by my guys. The UI UX that you see on your phone or your tablet, your computer or your TV in Apple TV, that UI UX was created by my tech guys. Mm. So they worked for some of the greatest people. And then, you know, our head of technology, you know, I had this vision of Edwin and told him what it needed to be. And one of the things I said to him was, using the technology should never dilute the learning time. And nobody opens the new iPhone box and gets their iPhone out and then reads the manual, because there isn't one. Mm-hmm. And if you have to learn how to interact with technology, you're diluting your learning time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want people having to think about technology to take away any opportunity to learn. It has to be seamless. And when I look at Meta and I talk to my team, and we've got a big technology team here in Toronto and a technology team, as I said, in LA, and I talk to them about Meta. I read about technology all the time. It's like, it's a problem for me. I'm always wanting to know the next big thing, and quite frankly, trying to just move one degree off it to see if there's an ability to make it better or more functional. Meta's hot right now. I mean, for sure. Do I think it's the next big thing? You know, AR and VR. We looked at that in our textbooks, and we looked at it in Edwin 5-6 years ago. We actually created some VR experiences for the Acropolis and for the Colosseum, which were really cool. You could either open your tablet, you could look in your Edwin, or you could go into a textbook, put your iPhone over it and gesticulate around and move around the Colosseum and the Acropolis. And novel, but no great user engagement, no great educational understanding. You could do more with video, or you could do better with video than you could with AR, VR. And I think that Meta is somewhat the same. Education doesn't need more shiny objects. You know, is Meta the internet, the web of the future? Maybe to some degree, but not in what I believe the evangelists on the metaverse are putting out there right now. The difference is the speed of technological movement, improvement, functionality, and relevance shortens with every generation. When I wanted to change us from a publishing company to a technology company, I looked at our board of directors and said, we've got the wrong board of directors. You know, we have a guy on our board of directors now who is chief technology officer at Twitter, or now Meta, as they're called. At Facebook, I beg your pardon, which is now Meta. Because his view of what we're doing as a technology company matters. So, you know, yeah, to some degree it will. But I don't believe in its pure form that it is today, and certainly not from some of the products that I saw down at ISTE. They were shiny objects. Now, I could be wrong. I always love surrounding myself with smarter people than me, which frankly, in full disclosure, when you're me, it's not that difficult to do. But I think we need to look at the iteration of education and the iteration of Meta and tie it to student outcomes. So this, I know that's not a very succinct answer, but I think it's a nuance.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I went through like a whole bunch of booths. I went to kind of the playground area where you get to try it all out. And I agree with you. I felt like it was a luxury purchase. And we talk about learning outcomes. Again, maybe I'm biased because I teach accounting and I teach kind of in that area. And, you know, I don't really see a use for this, but I'm trying to put myself in other teachers' shoes. And I feel like for my classrooms, I'm like, I think I could do an equally, if not better job without some of these toys.
I agree.
You know, I don't know.
And there's the one thing a teacher doesn't need right now is another shiny penny.
Yes.
Teachers need things that will allow them to, with knowledge, focus on the students that they need to focus on whilst being able to let the other students tumble in learning, knowing it's safe. And that's what Edwin's about. Edwin is about, it's a safe sandbox of learning. Every material in there is an approved learning material in all different formats. So it's not an excuse for a textbook. It's totally different experience. But if a teacher looks at the engagement of students and sees that one of them isn't doing as well as they have the capability to do, they can leave the other 24 kids and focus on that one. They can't do that if they've got to keep looking at different technologies and keep, we need to give teachers time to do what they did. They chose a noble profession. No one went into teaching to become rich. Yeah. Right?
No, absolutely. Definitely not.
They are good people on a noble mission. Yes. Let's make their mission easier, not harder.
I agree. And honestly, like, it's funny when I went to one of the booths, they're like, oh yeah, so we'll come into your classroom with a set of 15 of these. There's going to be a whole training module. It's going to take a week, whatever. I'm like, oh man, like that alone. I'm like, don't even give me the cost anymore. I'm like yeah. You're telling me there's like training, you got there's people coming in. I'm like, this sounds like a nightmare to use and implement, right? The school year's going to be over by the time I figure this out. But anyways, I digress. I do want to talk about a little kind of going on more of the ed tech side, since we just came from an ed tech conference. Do you think that, I guess here's some of my thoughts. I think that sometimes technology could be a little bit overwhelming for students and teachers. Not just for teachers, but students. I hear from them all the time, like, oh, we're using this now, we're using that. Do you think that there's some things that could just be taught kind of the old fashioned way, you know, especially maybe with the younger kids, paper, pen, textbook, toys, right? We talk about evolution. We're talking about pushing the boundaries and moving forward, but it's that old saying, like, if it's not broken, why fix it? And again, I don't teach elementary school. So again, maybe I'm out of this world. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I imagine that maybe in certain grades, in the lower grades, when you're teaching the alphabet or teaching whatever, maybe the old school way of teaching those things is better. We all turned out just fine, right? We all know the alphabet. We all know our multiplication tables. Are we trying to, you know, add something shiny to something that doesn't need to be shined? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think you're spot on. When we looked at what became Edwin, and it was we gave it a project name before we launched. In 2018 was our beta year. We were in classrooms and not charging for it and so forth. But it was originally called Project Herschel, after the backpacks.
Oh, yes. You're right.
Because the reason I chose the name Project Herschel was because I didn't want these kids to go and have to carry 30-pound backpacks. I wanted all the learning all in one place that weighed, you know, whatever the device was, and that was it. But as we progressed, originally it was going to be for all K-12 schools. But as we progressed, I'm like, you know what? And we had some early years experts on our team who were really some of the top early years pedagogists in the world. So we said, okay, it's not broken. That's how they learn. So we started at grade 4 for Edwin. Edwin now goes from grade 4 and in some provinces all the way up to grade 12. And many of the provinces in the country to grade 10, but it will continue to grow around the world. But I agree with you. I think JK, pre-K up to grade 3, it's just fine.
Yeah.
Play-based learning, learning your ABCs. I mean, there's a whole lot going on right now with literacy, particularly here in Ontario, whether you go back to phonics after doing it, you know, leveled readers, and there's enough going on, and I want to stay away from politics. Yeah. But I think, you know, kids at that age, you got it just fine.
Yeah.
I watched my kids go through it and they did great.
Yeah.
But I think when kids are exposed to technology, then they have an habitualization in the rest of their life that they like and see as normal.
Yeah.
So when you get into higher grades, they expect to be able to search, not just go to a table of contents and tell them what page to go to. They expect to see related things. And if it is all based around pedagogical substance and learning, that's fine. But I don't know what's going to happen in the lower grades, but I will tell you right now, we are really focused on lower grades in the methodologies that we have been for years and years and years. And I don't see that changing in the short term.
My one worry about all this amazing tech that we're offering is you're solving one problem, but then creating another problem. And what I mean by that is the kind of this dependency, this addiction to tech, to your phone, to your tablets, to your laptop. I see that in the classroom. We create one problem, but then the kids just, it's like cigarettes to them now. It's the equivalent. They're like, oh my God, I got to pull out my cell phone. And I'm like, all right, guys, like, you know, we're just trying to have a conversation and they can't focus. And I almost worry that when you kind of introduce tech too early, I don't know, maybe in the younger ages, and I see parents kind of, you know, in a restaurant, give them a tablet while, you know, the parents are trying to talk and you see the kids, you know, 3 years old, you know, on an iPad. I'm like, I don't know, like, is that doing more harm? And kind of that's my worry about introducing tech too early. And I don't know, I don't have an answer of what age that is appropriate to introduce that stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think that, you know, that's the power of the teacher, because a great teacher is a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. And if you're telling a great story, none of your boys and girls in your classroom are looking at the phones.
I agree. Bang on.
If you tell the story in such a compelling way, they'll pay attention to you. You're the teacher. And that's the position that in some countries around the world is revered. I was in Singapore right before the pandemic. Teachers are considered in society higher than a lawyer or the president of a bank.
Yes, I've heard that before.
It's unbelievable, and quite appropriately so.
Yeah.
But I think if the technology that's provided aids learning, something I say to everybody, and one of the things that was most vocal from the community at large across Canada when we launched Edwin and the ideology of Edwin was, oh, my kids spend too much time on screens as it is. They don't need more screen time. Well, not all screen time is created equal. If you're learning and you're learning in a way that betters your learning outcomes, that gets you more engaged, that gets kids to say something that someone said to me in Ottawa 2 weeks ago, I love school now. I walked out of that school like, wow. And I'm with our head of Edwin, front-facing operations. And I said, you know, Megan, that makes me feel like I'm doing okay. Mm-hmm. I love learning now. The question was, what has Edwin done to you?
Right.
That's bettered your learning journey. And I said, it's pretty straightforward. I used to hate school. Now I love school. I love learning now. So I think that as long as you get it right, and teachers are still the teachers. I mean, think about the word teacher.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's pretty powerful stuff. And if you're good at it, then they'll pay attention to you. And when you tell them to be on task and engage in learning, even if it is on technology, or even as it was in a textbook, they'll listen to you. But what we want to do is make good teachers great, average teachers good and on the journey to great, and teachers who are new or perhaps self-described Luddites with technology, we want to make it so easy for them, we'll give them back the time that they need to be able to spend times with the student that need them.
Steve, I'm looking at the time. We've already blown the light. I said I was key to keep us on track, but I'm like, oh, this conversation is going too good. Let's just stretch the time a little bit, but we definitely got to wrap things up now. Maybe a couple of concluding questions. My first question is, over the last 2 years, what have you learned about yourself, whether it's personally, professionally, during this whole COVID nonsense? What were some of your key takeaways, you know, as a person or as a business leader over the last 2 years?
Oh, I mean, so many. It's a complex question because where I'm at in my life. But what I learned is the power of interaction with people. I have spent the last 35 years in leadership running, you know, big public companies, you know, education companies, media companies. When I was in automotive, I lived in Korea and I lived in, you know, Germany and France, and I've lived all over the world. And the thing that I would say is what I really understood is that the power of managing by walking around is real. Dropping by people's desks and asking them how they're doing, letting them ask me questions without it being a formal setting of a company town hall, or getting to work with our consumers, and the consumers of our materials are students. The teacher is the enabler, but the consumer is the student. So I'd like to spend, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a month traveling around schools, watching kids interact, asking them questions, spending time with the teachers, dealing with the politicians at the different ministries to get my roadmap of where to go. And when that's replaced by Zoom, the power of managing by walking around is gone. People are happy to see you for a minute, but then they, you know, I'm on another Zoom call, I'm sat in front of my computer, talking with teachers, listening to their experiences. That becomes your lived experience, not an interacted experience. So I learned that the power of people and the power of community is far greater than anything I ever thought. And I always thought it was powerful, but you take it for granted when that's a societal norm.
Great answer. Great answer. And of course, for teachers and administrators and maybe even students that are perhaps listening to this episode, where can they connect with you online if they got more questions or want to pick your brain? Are you on Twitter, social media, TikTok? Yeah. You tell me, where can people find you?
The most active channel for me is Twitter, and it's at Nelson Steve B. And if anybody wants to know more about Edwin, at Edwin Classroom is their Twitter handle. And we've got the largest educational following on Twitter, I believe, in the world, at Nelson Classroom. But anybody wants to be in touch with me or talk, at Nelson Steve B on Twitter, I'd be delighted to hear from you.
Incredible. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming in on today to have this chat with us. This was an awesome episode, and just to kind of learn from you was an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much for joining in on to the Teacher Hotline today.
Thank you very much, Ronald. It was my pleasure.
And thank you to all our listeners out there as well for tuning in. If you enjoy this episode, don't forget to follow us on Instagram and on Facebook at the Teacher Hotline. Of course, don't forget to subscribe and follow us on all your podcast streaming services like Spotify, Apple. Don't forget to give us 5 stars, leave a review, keep us going. Guys, we'll see you next week. Take care.